Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Armchair Survivalist. My name is Kurt Wilson, the Armchair Survivalist, and today is September the 5th in the year 2021. Welcome to the show. You can go to armchairsurvivalist.com and you scroll down and you'll see all the different ways to listen to me. I'm on pretty much every podcast venue there is. I got a lot of show to get done today, so I'm going to make this real quick. Little information, Survival Enterprises. We sold out of all the Mountain House food, and I'm telling you guys this, too many people out there aren't grasping the concept of shortages. So we sold out of that pallet of Mountain House bucket food that we got. I contacted Mountain House and said, okay, I want to get another one or two pallets of this stuff. And they said, well, we have three different versions. We're out of two of them. We have 78 buckets left of one of them. And then we don't think we're going to have any food available for sale till sometime beginning of next year. You follow that? Mountain House is running out of supplies to freeze dry. So we have another pallet coming. The last pallet for this year available. It will be in the store sometime next week. I'm not sure when. And you, if you're interested in getting it, any of it, it'll be $110. It's a little cheaper. It's a different form. It's still a bucket with all these pouches in it. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's only going to be $110. Anybody wants it delivered anywhere in the United States, it's $20 to $25 for shipping. So that'll be on the website. It's at survivalenterprises.com, SE1.US. We'll get it handled as soon as possible. We have ham radios still in. They're going fast. Shortwave radios. Everything is going to happen fast. You're going to think one day, you know, maybe I ought to get some tuna. Maybe I ought to get some canned tuna. And 2 days later, you get to the store and they say, well, our shipment didn't come in. The canneries are on strike, or they can't get employees to the canneries, so they're not canning tuna, or there's a shortage of tin. People are not grasping the concept of domino effect. We have these container ships that are sitting in Long Beach. They're sitting in Los Angeles. They're not in there yet because there's nobody there to unload them, so they're anchored out at sea. There's probably about 35 of them out there now, and these are the monster container ships with about 5,000 containers each. They can't come to port because there's only a skeleton crew there that's offloading these ships. And then once the ships are offloaded, the Teamsters have to come in and load the 40-foot containers onto trucks. Well, they can't because there's no truck drivers to drive the trucks. There's a shortage. It's not that there's none. There's a shortage. So we have a shortage all the way down the supply line. And then once a truck gets loaded and it hauls it off to a distribution center somewhere, like a Safeway distribution center, there's almost nobody there to unload it. So this whole domino effect is happening, and it's going to happen fast. And you're going to find out you're going to be SOL. You need something. You think you need something. Get off your butt and buy it now. I don't care if you got to use a credit card. Don't go crazy with this, though. All right? Winter's coming. Who knows what's going to happen with that? I don't have a lot of time to talk about everything. Like, I have different categories: economy, health, food, the liberal psychosis, Democrat perversion. We're going to have to go right directly into Dimwit, because Dimwit and the communists that control him have pretty much planned to create total subjugation in the United States, pretty much take over everything. And you know, one of the things they're going to want to do is take our guns one way or the other. We can see the back door happening right now. The ammo problem is part of the back door. The back door is, let's not go directly head on head with these crazy gun owners. Let's go in the back door. Let's ban the import of ammunition. Let's ban this. Let's ban that. And they're doing it. So anyway, we're going to go directly into Dimwit the Puppet.
Likelihood there's going to be the Taliban overrunning everything and owning the whole country is highly unlikely.
Panic, chaos, a staggering collapse.
The Taliban is in control of Afghanistan.
President Biden this morning facing the catastrophic failure of U.S. foreign policy.
Kabul is falling now.
The country is
complete chaos.
The Taliban have won this war.
With an emboldened and stronger Taliban that has greater access to weapons and technology that we supplied.
Anguish and agony as 15,000 Americans try to escape Kabul.
First of all, I think it's irresponsible to say Americans are stranded. They are not.
Breaking news, and it's difficult, can confirm that a number of U.S. service members were killed at the Kabul airport.
You set a deadline, you pulled troops out, you sent troops back in, and now 12 Marines are dead. Do you bear any responsibility for the way that things have unfolded in the last 2 weeks?
I bear responsibility for fundamentally all that's happened.
That was a new release from the Trump campaign, which pretty much nailed it. Though mentally Biden is not really there, and he doesn't have cognitive ability whatsoever, he's literally a programmed robot. He does what he's told, when he's told, and he really doesn't give a damn the effects, because he's a communist. And now the United States is under full control of communism. It's a little different in the United States than it is in communist China or communist Russia or any places like that, because we are the most heavily armed citizenry in the world. We have more weapons and trained members of the citizen militia than all world armies put together. That's what scares them. So what they have to do is use propaganda. They have to create people, and they do this from birth, and they put you, when you put into the public school system, they shove as many drugs into your system as possible to make you as stupid as possible and unwilling and unable to learn. And then they allow you to grow up into the public school system. And by the time you're out, you're so disillusioned with life that you'll pretty much follow any order that's given to you. And that's what they're looking at. And that's what they're trying to do. And the main thing that these communists have to do is take our weapons away. You know what the first thing the Taliban did when they gained full control over Afghanistan? They demanded everyone, all citizens, turn in their weapons and their ammunition. And the reason is, this is the reason, we don't want you to suffer legal repercussions for keeping illicit firearms and ammunition in your homes. That was their reason. So Dimwit and his communist handlers, they want to disarm all U.S. citizens, but they armed the Taliban with more weaponry than the Ukrainian army has. Let me give you a list of the stuff. Now, they took this off of their website. The State Department had a list of these of the, what was left, and they took it off because they don't want proof. 8,000 trucks, 162,000 radios, 16,000 night vision goggles, 358,000 assault rifles. These assault rifle, per definition, is a select fire rifle or carbine, meaning it can shoot semi-automatic or fully auto. 176 artillery pieces, 64,000 machine guns, 42,000 pickups. You've seen the Muslims driving around with their pickups. 169 armored personnel carriers, 155 mine-proof vehicles, 634 M1117s, 22,000 Humvees. Then about 100 various helicopters and about 100 various fixed-wing aircrafts. Now, Dimwit came out and flat lied and said, oh, they've all been disabled. Nobody will be able to use any of these weapons or anything. Well, really? So then the video that Trump posted of hundreds of these vehicles driving through Kabul and other cities in Afghanistan and videos of them on trains headed to Iran, those must be all wrong. No. Well, we have a saying in the military that when something is so screwed up, it's called a cluster F. So that's basically the way Biden is functioning now. I don't think he really even knows what he did. I really don't. He's not there. He's somewhere off in the Horsehead Nebula, floating around with other protozoans. But what's going on is that the communists in the United States are working faster and faster to achieve their goal, which is complete subjugation. And they'll do it with the pharmaceutical companies. They'll do it with the military. They'll do it with the industrial complex. They'll do it any way they want. And Biden himself, for some stupid reason, he actually thinks he's right, which makes him more dangerous.
Good evening. As Hunter's dad single-handedly caused the deadliest day in Afghanistan since 2011, should Biden be forced to resign? We'll have these answers and more for you tonight. But first, let's bring you up to speed about all the blood on Biden's clean hands. After military intelligence warned the Biden administration that a Taliban takeover of Afghanistan was certain if Biden were to pull out all U.S. troops, Biden decided to pull out all U.S. troops. Shockingly, the Taliban then took over Afghanistan, leaving tens of thousands of Americans and American allies stranded as the murderous Taliban began hunting them down. Biden's decision to defy military intelligence came after military intelligence found no signs of intelligence within the Biden administration. Biden then sent troops back into a now much more dangerous Afghanistan. And just days later, a bombing at the Kabul airport killed over 200 people, including 13 U.S. service members, making Biden single-handedly responsible for the deadliest day in Afghanistan since 2011. But if it weren't for Biden, the families of these fallen 13 U.S. service members wouldn't have had the chance to receive the worst news of their entire lives. And that's something the Biden administration can start building back better on. And to continue building better on it, during the dignified transfer of the fallen U.S. service members, as the nation was pouring its heart out with love and respect for them and their families, Biden was busy showing no signs of respect for them and their families, as he was seen checking his watch. The mother of one Marine who was killed because of Biden's Afghanistan decisions had this to say about Biden when speaking of her son's death. "I never thought that feckless piece of crap would send him to his death and smirk on television while he's talking about people dying. The dementia-ridden piece of crap needs to be removed from office. It never would have happened under Trump." She went on to call Biden a treasonous man and a disgusting piece of crap. This just in! Fact checkers had to make no corrections to her statements. In other news, Biden left tens of thousands of Americans behind, along with tens of thousands of American allies, leaving them for dead in the hostile-controlled Taliban Afghanistan. But interfering with Biden's plan to get more Americans killed, a group of Special Forces veterans went to Afghanistan on their own private rescue mission to save American lives, as well as high-risk Afghanistan allies. Soldiers who assisted these special rescue missions chose to directly disobey the Biden administration's orders to not go outside the perimeter of the airport. And for all of you sitting at home with blue hair thinking socialism would be a good idea, this is what bravery, not obedience, looks like. This just in! These patriots are absolute heroes. They chose to disobey the orders of an incompetent and cowardly administration in order to save lives and serve their country. What was that Mark Twain quote? Patriotism is supporting your country all of the time and your government when it deserves it. Meanwhile, as those heroes are defying Biden's orders in order to save American lives, as the Taliban is actively hunting down Americans and Afghan allies to murder them, the Biden administration gave the Taliban a list of American names and Afghan allies who are currently hiding from the Taliban in Afghanistan. Congressman Dan Crenshaw, who is a former Navy SEAL who served in Afghanistan, had this to say about it. "If true, this qualifies as borderline treason. We need to find out who is responsible for giving the Taliban a hit list, and they need to go to prison." Well, Congressman Crenshaw, it is true, and it was Biden who gave the Taliban a hit list of American names. This just in! Some people are pretending that Biden is worsening the situation by the day in Afghanistan and getting Americans killed because of his incompetence, rather than realizing this is a treasonous administration using a demented old man as their puppet while it willfully betrays its own country.
I guess one step at a time when it comes to accepting reality. Right?
But of course the Biden administration isn't betraying the United States. While it's busy getting Americans deliberately killed in Afghanistan, over here on U.S. soil, the Biden administration is actively taking away U.S. citizens' constitutional rights, creating a lower class of citizens,
lying to its own people every day to try to control them with fear, violating the Nuremberg Code, which is a direct human rights violation of its own citizens. Oh, and trying to disarm its population. All while being very friendly with the Chinese Communist Party. So when you add it all up, I'm pretty sure the Biden administration isn't doing anything treasonous, because it would be very inconvenient to acknowledge that reality. We happen to have a question from a viewer that's just come in on live television that's already written on my page. Dear One Source of Truth, when is it safe to assume a government has become treasonous and is betraying its own citizens and country? Well, they'd probably make an announcement telling you that that's what they're doing. And until that happens, it's safe to assume your government is not treasonous and betraying you. Because thinking otherwise would make you crazy. But Americans, I want to assure you, you can still trust that the government is protecting you. I mean, with a leader who is strong enough to hate America and to fall asleep during the middle of a meeting with Israel's prime minister, you've got no cause to be concerned. And when he woke up from not being able to stay conscious, the president had this to say.
As one nation, America mourns the loss of our brave and brilliant American service members in a savage and barbaric terrorist attack in Afghanistan.
Whoops, that was a real president who cares about his country. Here's what Biden had to say.
Ladies and gentlemen, they gave me a list here. The first person I was instructed to call on was Kelly O'Donnell of NBC.
They gave him a list of people he's allowed to call on? And who are they that are controlling him? Powerful leadership so far. What else do you have to say, Joe?
When I came into office, I inherited a deal that President Trump negotiated with the Taliban.
Yep, you heard it right here. Biden just blamed Trump for what he did in Afghanistan. Man, communists do not like to take any self-responsibility, do they? I'm personally paid to tell you, I trust the president more already. And I wonder what would happen if someone told him that Trump isn't president anymore. He is. With a huge disaster in Afghanistan, a loss of American lives, a willingness to leave Americans behind to get killed by the Taliban, and giving a hit list of American names to the Taliban, and definitely not committing treason, should Biden resign? The answer is a resounding no! Resigning would interfere with Biden's duties to serve the Chinese Communist Party. And when Americans were polled, would you rather have an incompetent Biden or a competent Kamala Harris in office, the results were, we're smart enough to know the same evil people would still be behind the scenes controlling everything. Well, America, your government is no longer protecting you. It's officially turned against you. So get your house in order, because it's on you now. Will the many stand for what's right while the few attempt to control all of them? We'll see. Good night. Good evening. As Hunter's dad single-handedly caused the deadliest day in Afghanistan since 2011, should Biden be forced to resign? We'll have these answers and more for you tonight. But first, let's bring you up to speed about all the blood on Biden's clean hands. After military intelligence warned the Biden administration that a Taliban takeover of Afghanistan was certain if Biden were to pull out all U.S. troops, Biden decided to pull out all U.S. troops. Shockingly, the Taliban then took over Afghanistan, leaving tens of thousands of Americans and American allies stranded as the murderous Taliban began hunting them down. Biden's decision to defy military intelligence came after military intelligence found no signs of intelligence within the Biden administration. Biden then sent troops back into a now much more dangerous Afghanistan. And just days later, a bombing at the Kabul airport killed over 200 people, including 13 U.S. service members, making Biden single-handedly responsible for the deadliest day in Afghanistan since 2011. But if it weren't for Biden, the families of these fallen 13 U.S. service members wouldn't have had the chance to receive the worst news of their entire lives. And that's something the Biden administration can start building back better on. And to continue building better on it, during the dignified transfer of the fallen U.S. service members, as the nation was pouring its heart out with love and respect for them and their families, Biden was busy showing no signs of respect for them and their families.
as he was seen checking his watch. The mother of one Marine who was killed because of Biden's Afghanistan decisions had this to say about Biden when speaking of her son's death. "I never thought that feckless piece of crap would send him to his death and smirk on television while he's talking about people dying. The dementia-ridden piece of crap needs to be removed from office. It never would have happened under Trump." She went on to call Biden a treasonous man and a disgusting piece of crap. This just in! Fact checkers had to make no corrections to her statements. In other news, Biden left tens of thousands of Americans behind, along with tens of thousands of American allies, leaving them for dead in the hostile-controlled Taliban Afghanistan. But interfering with Biden's plan to get more Americans killed, a group of Special Forces veterans went to Afghanistan on their own private rescue mission to save American lives, as well as high-risk Afghanistan allies. Soldiers who assisted these special rescue missions chose to directly disobey the Biden administration's orders to not go outside the perimeter of the airport. And for all of you sitting at home with blue hair thinking socialism would be a good idea, this is what bravery, not obedience, looks like. This just in! These patriots are absolute heroes. They chose to disobey the orders of an incompetent and cowardly administration in order to save lives and serve their country. What was that Mark Twain quote? Patriotism is supporting your country all of the time and your government when it deserves it. Meanwhile, as those heroes are defying Biden's orders in order to save American lives, as the Taliban is actively hunting down Americans and Afghan allies to murder them, the Biden administration gave the Taliban a list of American names and Afghan allies who are currently hiding from the Taliban in Afghanistan. Congressman Dan Crenshaw, who is a former Navy SEAL who served in Afghanistan, had this to say about it. "If true, this qualifies as borderline treason. We need to find out who is responsible for giving the Taliban a hit list, and they need to go to prison." Well, Congressman Crenshaw, it is true, and it was Biden who gave the Taliban a hit list of American names. This just in! Some people are pretending that Biden is worsening the situation by the day in Afghanistan and getting Americans killed because of his incompetence, rather than realizing this is a treasonous administration using a demented old man as their puppet while it willfully betrays its own country.
I guess one step at a time when it comes to accepting reality. Right?
But of course the Biden administration isn't betraying the United States. While it's busy getting Americans deliberately killed in Afghanistan, over here on U.S. soil, the Biden administration is actively taking away U.S. citizens' constitutional rights, creating a lower class of citizens, lying to its own people every day to try to control them with fear, violating the Nuremberg Code, which is a direct human rights violation of its own citizens, and trying to disarm its population, all while being very friendly with the Chinese Communist Party. So when you add it all up, I'm pretty sure the Biden administration isn't doing anything treasonous, because it would be very inconvenient to acknowledge that reality. We happen to have a question from a viewer that's just come in on live television that's already written on my page. "Dear One Source of Truth, when is it safe to assume a government has become treasonous and is betraying its own citizens and country?" Well, they'd probably make an announcement telling you that that's what they're doing. And until that happens, it's safe to assume your government is not treasonous and betraying you, because thinking otherwise would make you crazy. But Americans, I want to assure you, you can still trust that the government is protecting you. I mean, with a leader who is strong enough to hate America and to fall asleep during the middle of a meeting with Israel's prime minister, you've got no cause to be concerned. And when he woke up from not being able to stay conscious, the president had this to say.
"As one nation, America mourns the loss of our brave and brilliant American service members in a savage and barbaric terrorist attack in Afghanistan."
Whoops, that was a real president who cares about his country. Here's what Biden had to say.
"Ladies and gentlemen, they gave me a list here. The first person I was instructed to call on was Kelly O'Donnell of NBC.
They gave him a list of people he's allowed to call on? And who are they that are controlling him? Powerful leadership so far. What else do you have to say, Joe?
"When I came into office,
I inherited a deal that President Trump negotiated with the Taliban.
Yep, you heard it right here. Biden just blamed Trump for what he did in Afghanistan. Man, communists do not like to take any self-responsibility, do they? I'm personally paid to tell you, I trust the president more already. And I wonder what would happen if someone told him that Trump isn't president anymore. He is. With a huge disaster in Afghanistan, a loss of American lives, a willingness to leave Americans behind to get killed by the Taliban, and giving a hit list of American names to the Taliban, and definitely not committing treason, should Biden resign? The answer is a resounding no! Resigning would interfere with Biden's duties to serve the Chinese Communist Party. And when Americans were polled, would you rather have an incompetent Biden or a competent Kamala Harris in office? The results were, we're smart enough to know the same evil people would still be behind the scenes controlling everything. Well, America, your government is no longer protecting you. It's officially turned against you. So get your house in order, because it's on you now. Will the many stand for what's right while the few attempt to control all of them? We'll see. Good night.
So I told you that the commies use back doors. In the United States, they have to use back doors because it's very hard for them to go straight forward because the American population hasn't totally become 100% stupid. It's only about 75% stupid. So they go back doors. One of the ways that the communists use to grant validity to their collection of psychosis and efforts to control the population is by claiming it's for health purposes. So Dimwit or his handler, see, it's hard to believe that Dimwit could do anything anyway. He's so senile, and his cognitive ability matches that of a rutabaga. But he appointed a communist to the head of the Centers for Disease Control. This is an anti-gun, anti-American commie female. So she has come up with an idea, or she's promoting this great idea. She's not going to call it gun control. It's they're going to study gun violence.
So the CDC is going to spend millions of taxpayer dollars to research gun violence as a health threat.
Yeah. But now, in a stunning turn, the current director of the CDC is announcing a plan to reduce gun violence, sharing it exclusively with CNN.
This is actually a stunning moment that a director of the CDC is even talking about this issue, is even using the word guns. It hasn't happened in years and years.
No person or organization has stopped the CDC from funding research. It has been prohibited from using tax dollars to advocate or promote gun control since 96, but not from conducting research. There are tons of research done on gun violence. The funding isn't the issue. What they want to do is exploit the CDC's perceived legitimacy to push gun control under the guise of national health crisis. I mean, come on. This woman was appointed to this position by Biden, and we all know where Biden stands on guns. Not to mention the position of director of CDC does not require Senate confirmation to take office. So essentially, Biden owns her. So forgive me for not being super optimistic about the fact that this person who owes her position to one of the most anti-gun presidents in our recent history is now going to try to use the perceived legitimacy of the CDC to research the gun violence epidemic. If you think for one second that she and the CDC are not going to push gun control under the guise of public health, you're fooling yourself.
Every day we turn on the news and there are more young people dying. I swore to the president and to this country that I would protect your health. This is clearly one of those moments, one of those issues that is harming America's health. One recent weekend in Chicago, we had 74 people shot. That same weekend, a party in Florida, 5 teenagers shot. That same weekend, a man in New York City, in Times Square, shot in the back, and the list goes on, week after week after week. Can anything be done about this?
Something has to be done about this. So 40,000 firearm-related deaths a year, 120,000 serious firearm-related injuries per year. The scope of the problem is just bigger than we're even hearing about. And when your heart wrenches every day you turn on the news, you're only hearing the tip of the iceberg.
Tip of the iceberg? No, we know exactly what's going on. We've known for years. A ton of people are committing suicide. The vast majority of gun homicides are black teens in the inner city shooting at each other. And a very small number of psychopaths who have almost the same type of background and clear signs of psychological and emotional issues are committing mass shootings. It's not complicated. We don't need the CDC spending millions of dollars to tell us this. Maybe you should have spent that money trying to find out why people are self-checking out. Maybe actually spend that money to actually address the very obvious socioeconomic issues in the inner city instead of ignoring it for the last several decades and acting shocked when it spirals out of control. Maybe spend that money to fix the absolute joke that is our mental health care system. No, instead, you rather have this fake interview talking about how you and the CDC are going to find the answers to questions we already know the answer to.
This time, she wants the CDC to find common ground with gun owners.
Let's agree, we don't want people to die.
If your only purpose is to research gun violence and not try to use your research to push gun control, why would you need to find a common ground with us? It should just be objective numbers and stats that you hand over and say, here's what we found. Only reason why you would need to find a common ground is if you plan on advocating for gun control. She just told on herself and doesn't even know it.
What can we do to stop people from dying?
She wants to allay gun owners' fears.
Generally, the word gun, for those who are worried about research in this area, is followed by the word control. And that's not what I want to do here. I'm not here about gun control. I'm here about preventing gun violence and gun death.
Since she wants to play dumb about why gun owners don't trust the CDC to study guns, I'll tell you why. In 1989, a top CDC official announced, "We're going to systematically build a case that owning firearms causes deaths. We're doing the most we can do given the political realities." In 1993, Dr. Mark Rosenberg of the Services Center for Disease Control said that the Clinton administration wanted to reframe the gun debate about gun control to portray guns as a public health menace. The gun control crowd loves to tell us that people with guns in their home are 2.7 times as likely to become homicide victims as people who don't keep a gun in the home. The statistic came from an article written by Dr. Kellerman and was supported by two grants from the CDC. The authors of that article literally admitted that half of the homicides that they used to come up with that stat occurred during the commission of a drug deal or another felony such as robbery, rape, and burglary. You even had doctors like Tim Wheeler, who testified in Washington to the Congressional Committee in charge of appropriation for the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control, that the CDC funded a gun control group's newsletter, which advised readers to engage in political activism against gun owners. We don't trust you because you've demonstrated over and over again that you can't be objective.
And she wants to involve gun owners in the CDC research to save lives.
If a gun owner said to you, "Dr. Walensky, I'm afraid you want to take away my gun."
And my answer to that is, come be part of the solution. Come to the table. Join us in the conversation. I don't want you to feel that way, right? I want you to teach me what you have done to make your gun safe. And then I want you to teach everybody else.
Oh, stop it. You only want us at the table if we agree with you. We've been telling you how we keep our guns safe online for decades. You don't need millions to find out what's been on YouTube for free. At the end of the day, I've been in the space long enough to know what soft propaganda looks like. Do we really believe that a guy that says this?
So to gun owners out there who say, well, a Biden administration means they're going to come for my guns.
Bingo. You're right if you have an assault weapon. The fact of the matter is they should be illegal, period.
Is really going to appoint someone who doesn't share his same views on guns? You can keep your fake sincerity. And we'll keep our guns.
Now we're getting to the meat of this show. How to buy a gun. Most people are under the impression you just walk into a store and you go, I want to buy that. And you give them the money and you fill out some paperwork and you take it away. Well, that's probably basically how it works. But there's tricks to it. A store is not the only place to buy a gun at right now. You can go to gun shows, as long as the communists allow us to have them anyway. But you can go to gun shows and you can buy firearms there. Now, if you want to register your firearm, then you buy it from a dealer. And it's not really registering, it's filling out paperwork, and then they make a phone call to the FBI, who lies and says that we're only keeping this information for a couple weeks and then we're destroying it. No, it's kept forever. The government knows you bought a firearm, and they know what firearm you bought, and they know what serial number it is, if you buy from a dealer. You don't have to buy from a dealer. You can buy from a private party. It just depends. Some places in the United States, you can pick up your little penny saver, nickels worth, whatever that throwaway paper is, and you'll find a section on hunting and firearms in there, and you'll find people who are selling everything from double-barrel shotguns to semi-automatic Beretta pistols to all kinds of stuff. I have a show that I'm going to play right now that's going to give you a lot of background information, and it's going to give you a lot of basically data that you should have when you start to look to buy a firearm. I'm going to play a show that I've done four or five times in the past 25 years. How to buy a gun and do it as quickly as you can.
Okay, so you've decided you want to buy a firearm. I'm going to tell you how to do it. There's more to buying a firearm than just saying, oh, I think I'll buy that gun. Everyone, if you aren't trained in handling firearms, I mean handguns and long guns, and a long gun is a long gun, like a gun that's longer, such as a shotgun or a rifle. Go get training. Any indoor range, gun range, anywhere in the United States will have an NRA certified instructor on staff or available at least one day a week. Go get trained. Get your NRA approved training. Get it out of the way. It's basically safety training and some functionality training. Well, first you have to determine your purpose. You're going to want to know. Let me back up. Who the hell am I to tell you how to buy a gun? I was a master gunsmith for 25 years. I'm a certified weapons master. You can give me any firearm. I don't care what it is. Blindfold me. I'll tell you what it is. And I'll take it apart. Blindfolded. Might have a little difficulty putting it back together, blindfolded, but I could still do it eventually. So I've got the bona fides. I know guns. And the important thing here is, what is your purpose? Why do you want to buy a firearm? You want it for investment? Which they're great investments if you get the right ones. Too many of them are just simple generic crap. So if you want an investment firearm, you'll have to do your own research on that. There are very many different variables out there. There are some highly collectible guns like 1800 Colt revolvers, commemorative Winchesters. There's a lot of different types. If it's more like in the realm of self-defense, hunting, or training, this is what you need to determine. And then, well, it's not just that. You have to determine, what do you want? You want a handgun? You want a rifle? You want a shotgun? Now, the best thing to do is try before you buy. Go to an indoor gun range. Find one locally that allows you to test the different types of firearms they have. And you'll pick some up. I had a friend that wanted a .454 Casull. He saw all the ads, and it was going to be coming out soon. This is a .45 caliber revolver. It was used by John Candy in one of the comedies that he was in. It was the most powerful production handgun made in the world. It was a .45 caliber round, but it was the lengthier index finger. This friend of mine, because he's a badass, he goes, I want this gun. I'm going to buy it. It was $1,800. He saved up his money, and when it came out, he bought it. So I took it apart. I polished the action up so it was smooth as cat's snot, and we went out to the range. This was funny. So this guy's a biker, right? He's all muscle. So he takes his handgun, and he gets into perfect stance on the range right there. He's ready and pulls the trigger, and boom! The gun flies over his shoulder directly into the garbage can. It was so astounding. It set off all the alarms. Because of the concussion that it did, it set off all the alarms around the area, and he was in shock. Well, we pulled it out of there, and he fired a few more rounds out of it, and then I fired a couple rounds out of it, and he said, that's it, I can't handle this gun. So you got to be able to handle the firearm and be comfortable with whatever firearm you get for whatever purpose, and that's the important part. So if you want self-defense, you want close in, do you want mid-range? When I say close in, I'm talking front door just got kicked in by two thugs. When I say mid-range, you're driving along on the interstate and you see 100 yards in front of you, five or six thugs with guns ready to shoot you. So you want something with a little more range. If you have, if you're familiar with handguns, then you can go ahead and get yourself a semi-automatic weapon. That's fine because, see, a semi-automatic handgun, you simply pull the slide back and release the slide, and a round is chambered automatically into the barrel. And each time you pull the trigger, the slide comes back, ejects the spent casing, on the way forward, grabs another round out of the magazine that's in the grip, and pushes it home into the barrel, ready for you to fire again. If you have to be able to understand how this functions, a semi-automatic handgun. Now, if it jams, most people will just stand there with this stupid look on their face, not knowing what to do. So you need to be familiar with that weapon. A revolver is different. It is idiot-proof. You pull the trigger. It's that simple. If it doesn't go off, you give it a few seconds, pull the trigger again. The cylinder rotates, goes to the next round. Why do you wait a few seconds? Because it could have what's called a hang fire. It means the primer might not have burst enough strength to ignite the powder, the charge in the cartridge, but it could slow burn and then all of a sudden ignite it. And you don't want a cartridge around going off with the cylinder having been already rotated a little bit, because that'll blow your pistol up. And there's all kinds of different calibers. And they go from the little 22 caliber all the way up to, and I wouldn't waste my time with anything above 45 ACP, automatic cartridge pistol. There's a lot of esoteric rounds out there, and I don't recommend any of them. Esoteric is a round that, like, you can't walk into Walmart and buy it, or a normal gun shop and buy it. So you want a normal caliber would be like 9mm, 40 S&W, 45 ACP. Those are standard self-defense rounds for semi-automatic weapons. Standard self-defense rounds for revolvers would be 38 Special, 357 Magnum, maybe even 45 Long Colt, or 45 Colt it's called. But again, you're back to, why are you buying it? What is the purpose of it? So again, self-defense with a handgun, you want a good enough caliber that it's going to knock someone down, or at least impart enough shock that they change their mind instantly. If you're a phenomenal shot, a 22 will work, because it is shot placement. Where do you put the bullet? If you're going to get a handgun for self-defense, become proficient at it. Practice. The first thing you're going to do is learn about the gun. Here's a surprising thing. Let's say you buy a Colt. Let's say you buy a 1911. All right, this is a military-style 45 ACP pistol. Go on YouTube, type in the name of the pistol you just bought, and you will see thousands of videos showing you everything from how to shoot them to how to clean them to how to disassemble and repair them. Everything's there. So I don't care if you buy a Glock, a Smith & Wesson revolver, a Colt, anything. I don't care what you buy. You can find all the information right there on YouTube. But become proficient with it. Go out to the range at least once a month if you can, and shoot about 50 rounds through it. Now, the rule on firearms and cleaning is you shoot it, you clean it the same day. What happens if you don't is that crud builds up inside of a firearm, not just in a barrel, not just in a chamber, but it gets around the outside. It gets inside of the firing pin block inside of a semi-automatic. It gets everywhere. You need to clean the gun as best as possible the day you shot it, because the stuff will start corroding. It'll start clogging up. I made thousands and thousands of dollars cleaning law enforcement firearms. Most of them would use an H&K or a Sig Sauer or Smith & Wesson or Glock, and they have what's called a firing pin block. You remove the slide from the top of the from the firearm, from the frame, turn it over, and there's a block inside of there that holds the firing pin inside. And it's a small, thin passageway the firing pin moves through, so the residue from cheap ammo clogs up that, and eventually the gun won't even fire. So we've charged money to tear the gun down and clean it, and it's because they never clean it. They wipe it off. That's it. Well, I shot it. Let me wipe it off. That's not good enough. You clean it. Again, YouTube's your friend. It'll show you how to clean it. Get a cleaning kit. Whatever firearm you buy, get a cleaning kit for it. Sure, there's a lot of universal cleaning kits out there. That's fine. But make sure it'll work on the firearm that you're buying. Recommendation is have a holster that would be comfortable for you. I don't recommend these cheap $12 Uncle Mike nylon, black nylon holsters, unless it's comfortable for you. I recommend a suede-lined leather like a Bianchi, and so it's something that fits you. And again, this is another thing. How are you going to carry this gun? Are you going to carry it in the open? Are you going to carry it in the woods? Are you going to carry it in a shoulder holster? Are you going to carry it concealed? You have to figure that out. Now, we're only talking handgun here. When you do buy a firearm, whether it's a handgun or a long gun, you're going to have to figure out your household's security level and your household's responsibility level. Now, my household, when my son was born, when he was 6 months old, he was out at the range with me. He had earplugs in his ear and headphones over his head, and I was explaining to him and showing him what a Colt 45 does. He just loved that all to hell. You have to determine that, because that determines how you're going to store this firearm. A firearm is worthless for self-defense if it's hidden in a safe. You can forget it. That's not what it is. That's not what it is. It's no longer for self-defense. So you'll have to determine how you're going to maintain the position of that firearm. Where are you going to keep it? Logically, don't keep it where some child can grab it.
And don't think just because you tell your 8-year-old kid, don't ever go in my room and touch my handgun, that he's going to obey. You know, there's different things you can get. There are safes. There's instant safes. In fact, Costco sells them. Home Depot sells them. Lowe's sells them that you just put your hand on. They're about a foot square and 6 inches deep. You put your hand on top and you press in a certain manner. That's the password to open the safe. It opens up and you can reach in and grab the gun real quick. There's also custom wall mounts, custom clocks, custom, all kinds of different furniture where you can keep your firearms handy. But you need to make sure that nobody can be harmed because you left your firearm in a position where it can be grabbed. And that thing, that includes, let's say your kid brings somebody home from school someday, and he decides to brag to his best friend that daddy has a Cobra 9mm. Let me show you. That's not okay. That's for self-defense, right? This is, we're talking self-defense. Let's say you want for training, which the training would be a target practice. And usually target practicing is like a 22. And those guns, the most accurate ones are going to be a semi-automatic. And we're talking handguns here. Most accurate is going to be a semi-automatic. Smith & Wesson makes a couple of them. Ruger makes some. Colt makes some. I mean, there's so many of them out there in the market now, it's astounding. Remember, you shoot it, you clean it. And if you're going to get a semi-automatic handgun, make sure you buy at least a half a dozen spare magazines. If you have the funds, buy the factory ones. The reason is that some of the aftermarket ones don't feed properly. And instead of pushing, allowing your slide to gently grasp the next round and pull it up into the chamber, it will pop it up and turn it sideways and your slide will close on a round sticking straight up. So it's best to get factory magazines or high-quality magazines that are recommended for that weapon. Now, the training part also, there's another gizmo you can get for training. Let's say you get a Sig Sauer with an exposed hammer. So that means exposed hammer means you can cock it to pull the trigger. Then you cock it again, pull the trigger, cock it again, pull the trigger. Now, it's not recommended to dry fire firearms of any kind. When you pull the trigger, the firing pin will slam forward with the intent of reaching resistance against the primer of the cartridge you have in the chamber, and that fires it. When you dry fire, that's what is called when you have no round in the chamber and you're just clicking the revolver or the gun or the auto, whatever it is. That can break the firing pin. So there actually are dummy rounds with Teflon primers in them that you can put in the chamber, and you can dry fire it. So instead of going tink, 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 it goes boom, boom, boom. Okay, and those are practice rounds. You can pick those up all kinds of places. eBay even sells them. Any caliber, name a caliber. Everything from, a 32 automatic, 380, 9mm, 38 special, 357 Magnum, 38 Super, 45 ACP, 45 long Colt, 30-06, 12 gauge, 308, you name it. Any caliber, you can have those practice, those safety rounds and use them. So then you'll get the feel of how the gun functions in your hand. There's also something if you want to spend the money. There's a little round that you can buy that's a laser emitter, and it slides in the chamber, and every time the firing pin hits the primer, it squirts the laser. The laser ignites. And you can get laser-activated targets. So you pull the trigger, and you see this little red dot show up on the target 25 feet away or 50 feet away. Now, that's cool. That really helps in training, especially in speed from the holster out to use. There's also, and if you want to go up further than that, when I say further, I mean expense-wise, there's games out there you can buy to where you actually train a live-action game. I've worked in some of those. That's a trip where you have these dummies pop up out of nowhere. You walk through a course and you have these dummies pop up off the floor. And you shoot. You're supposed to shoot them. You're supposed to determine if it's an aggressor or a passive person or a civilian or what have you. When you hit the dummy, it'll go down and it tells you where you hit it. If you hit it in the head and hit it in the chest, if you hit it in the groin, the hip, or what have you, those are cool. That's a lot of money for toys, though, I can tell you right now. The another realm of self-defense would be a long gun, a shotgun, as it were.
See, most of the time people think in self-defense, it's their house. A rifle, it's a smaller cartridge, more used for hunting, for killing game. And a rifle cartridge, can be anything from 223, 308, 4570, 30-06, that kind of stuff. That's going to go through your wall, your door, the door next door, the wall, his wall. You know what I mean? That's way too powerful for that. For in-home self-defense, I like a low-powered handgun, and that would be like a 38 special or even a 45. With me, it doesn't matter because I'm a good enough shot. If I ever had to, I'd kneecap him. But one of the best home defense weapons ever made is a 12-gauge shotgun. Now, if that's too strong for you, you can think about a 20-gauge. But you get a pump shotgun. I don't care how screwed up somebody is. If they hear somebody rack the pump of a shotgun through their front door, they're going to go away. And I've sold many, many hundreds and hundreds of pump shotguns in my career. And I've had dozens of people tell me, yeah, somebody threatened me at my house, and I just picked the shotgun up, and I just crank, crank, and they took off. No ammo in it, just made the sound. Just crank the pump. You have a button for release, and you pull back, and it's supposed to push a round, a live round, into the injector, and then you pull the slide forward, and it puts it into the chamber. Ready to fire. That's a pump shotgun. There's semi-automatic shotguns also. They're much more expensive, and they're a little harder to take care of. Pump shotgun is one of the oldest military weapons known to man, cartridge weapon. It was used in the Spanish-American War. Again, you get a shotgun, don't just buy the shotgun and say, oh, look, Big Five has them on sale, you know, $149.95, or what have you. And by the way, you look at Walmart, Big Five Sporting Goods, Cabela's, Sportsman's Warehouse, or whatever sporting goods store, big ones, big box stores you have near you, you can get some hell of a deals on shotguns. Believe me, it is phenomenal, some of the prices they have. Don't just buy it. Buy yourself a couple boxes of rounds. And for home defense, you don't want double-aught buck. You want something like number 6 to number 12 shot, pigeon shot, dove shot. You don't want the pellets continuing on down the street if you do have to fire the round. So you go and get those, and you test fire them. You take it out to a range or wherever you can, and then, you know, you're not going to be hitting a squirrel at 100 feet with this thing. This is for, I don't know, 25, 50 feet, depending on what round you have. See, with a shotgun, you have different rounds you can put in there. Just because it looks like a shotgun shell doesn't mean it's not deadly. Some shotgun shells actually have 4 or 5 38 caliber balls in them, and some will have 150 little pellets in them. So it just depends on what round you buy. But you go out there and you get used to it and shoot it. When you shoot a shotgun, you make sure it's firmly up against your shoulder. This is not a VW Bug. This is a Maserati in heat. So you remember that. Don't play around. Be firmly in control. You are. A firearm is an inanimate object. You are firmly in control of it. Now, where are you going to buy these things? We're going to talk more about this some other time. Before you buy one, see if you can test fire it. I told you about that. Do your research on the quality. And you also want to make sure you can get parts easily for this, and you can get ammo easily for this. Now, there's a book you can get. It's called The Blue Book of Gun Values by S.P. Fjedsted. And I have the 36th edition right here. It's about 6 inches thick, weighs about 10 pounds, and it has almost every firearm ever manufactured listed in it, and the conditions. Condition determines the value of the firearm. That's something you got to be careful of. Now, whatever you do, don't do anything hinky. Do nothing illegal, okay? There's places you can buy guns. Gun store, but you're going to fill out the paperwork. You're going to fill out a 4473, okay? Local paper, some guy is just selling a gun. You check it out, and if you want to buy it, you buy it, right? Gun show or your friends. Now, if you do a gun store, I told you, you're going to fill out the registration. Check your local laws. Every state has different psychosis in it. You can buy on the internet, by the way. you go on like gunbroker.com or other places that sell firearms, you're not going to buy it directly. You'll have to have a local federal firearms licensee who can receive the firearm. You can buy it over the internet and they'll ship it to him, and then you fill the paperwork out with him. Now, if you buy it through, like if you go to a gun show, most of the people at gun shows aren't dealers. So they don't care about receipts, or I'm sorry, they don't care about paperwork. They care about receipts, and that's all. Maybe you'll find a gun you like at a gun show, but the guy's a dealer. Well, you're going to fill out paperwork. So this is up to you. I always recommend no paperwork, so there's no paper trail. But you got to check your local laws. Some of you live in places that have the psychosis of liberalism there. In other words, Democrats are in control of you. Always bring a bore light when you're looking at guns. I don't care if it's a handgun, a shotgun, or a rifle. Bring a bore light. A bore light is either a specifically made flashlight that is not overly bright, that you can put, you open the chamber of a gun and you stick the bore light in the chamber and you get up on the muzzle end and you look. You want to make sure there's no rings inside of there. You want to make sure it's clean. Never buy a firearm that's not clean. If you guys got a gun that you want and its barrel's dirty, ask him to clean it for you. If he doesn't, he's trying to hide something from you. You get these guns that have rings in them. That means a round is blown up inside of it. Or barrels that have rotted out. You don't want any of that crap. Now, what I do sometimes, I have a little piece of white paper. And I stick that in the chamber. And I look in the muzzle. And I move it around to where the light's reflecting off the white paper up the chamber. So it's, you can do that. You check out the finish on the outside. Is it worn? If it's supposed to be blued, you want it all blued. You don't want some light gray spots on it where it's been worn coming in and out of the holster. All of these things change the value of the gun. Let's say a Smith & Wesson Model 10 is worth $300 in mint condition. That's a six-shot revolver, 38 special. So guy's got one, but he's carried it in a holster for 10 years, so the bluing's worn off the cylinder on both sides. That knocks about $25 off the value right there. Now there's also stainless. Now stainless does not mean rustless, it means stainless. Remember that. Stainless is good because it's very forgiving. Literally, I've dropped a revolver in the lake, and it took me a week to find it and get it out. Never rusted. I just wiped it down, cleaned it up, and it was good as new. Blued, that ain't going to happen, believe me. There's also nickel coating. If you want a pimp gun, something to really impress people, well, you get it nickel plated. And there's all kinds of other different finishes that you can get on firearms. So you're looking for cosmetic damage. You're looking for rust. You're looking for scrapes. You're looking for broken sights, broken triggers. The grips or the stock has been fractured and repaired or not repaired. So you look at these things. Say you're looking at a shotgun and the buttstock is sloppy loose on there. Ask the guy, can you tighten this up for me? If there's something blatantly wrong with a firearm and the guy won't do anything that's easy to fix it right then, walk away or offer him 1/10 what he's asking. Then you're going to check your function. If it's a handgun that has a hammer, cock it, move the action, make sure the trigger functions, make sure the hammer drops. If it's a revolver, make sure the cylinder rotates freely. Make sure the cylinder's lined up. See, when you pull the hammer back on a revolver, the next chamber cylinder will rotate over and the round should be lined up with the chamber of the barrel. If it's not lined up perfectly, that's called out of time. So it needs to be timed properly. So that means it's going to need some work done to it. Bolt action rifle, pull the bolt out. Look down the chamber. Look in the barrel. Make sure everything's functioning perfectly. Make sure every firearm you look at, whether it's a handgun or a long gun, make sure the safety works. There's a lot of semi-automatic handguns that the safeties have been broken off of or filed down. Make sure the safety works. If you're looking at a lever-action rifle like a Winchester or a Marlin, make sure that this thing functions. Make sure it functions. Use common sense. A pump-action rifle or shotgun, work the action. Make sure it works. Use common sense. Again, this is all common sense. Now, here's a little trick that I used. Get a quarter-inch dowel about 6 inches long. A dowel, okay? Wooden, a little wood stick. Make sure it's perfectly flat on both ends. Because what you're going to do, you want to know if the gun fires. Well, then, say you go to a gun show and you're looking at some revolvers. Well, how are you going to know if that thing fires? You can't, unless you cock the gun, and you aim the gun straight up. Obviously, it's unloaded. And you drop the dowel straight down the muzzle to where it sits on the back of the fire, on the where the firing pin will come out, and then pull the trigger. Now, the firing pin should hit that dowel hard enough to where the dowel either jumps up 2 or 3 inches or flies out of the barrel. It's easy to tell on a handgun. It's harder to tell on a rifle, but you can listen for it. And this works, a quarter-inch dowel works on every .30 caliber gun there is, 9mm, 38, 357, 30-06, 308. Okay, they're all basically the same 9mm thing. Cock the bolt, close it, drop the dowel down the muzzle, put it up to your ear, pull the trigger. You should hear the dowel fly up and drop back down. Then you know it works. So make sure everything that's functional is functional on a firearm. And then, now you've already done your due diligence, so you should know what the value of this thing is. And you judge that not just on what the book says, but on whether or not you want it right now, whether or not it's rare, whether or not it's an investment, whether or not you need a gun. There's many variables. We didn't have the time to go really in depth on how to buy a firearm last show, so that's what I'm going to do now. Now, first off, make sure you're trained. Don't think you're trained, okay? Make sure you're trained. Go to a local range. Go in a class with an NRA-certified instructor. It's real simple. Make sure that you're fully aware of what you're doing. Now, here's the key. You need to determine your purpose. What do you want a firearm for? You want it for self-defense? You want it for hunting? You want it for training purposes? You know, target practice, that kind of stuff. Do you want it for collecting? Firearms are like gold. They often go up in value. Not all the time. Many times, firearms, if kept in original mint condition, go up in value. There's a lot of variables to it. Some guns, doesn't matter if mint condition or not, like an 1873 Colt revolver. It doesn't matter how bad cosmetic it is. It's still worth thousands and thousands of dollars. So first thing you need to do is figure out, what do I want this gun for? Let's say you decide you want it for self-defense. Well, there's more to it than just that. Self-defense of what? In your house, in an apartment, in city travel, like you're going to be going out on the city, business location, like you got a store, going up in the woods, concealed carry. These are all considered self-defense. So you need to determine what you want. From there, you know, we're just staying with self-defense here. From there, there are different variables. Some people like handguns. Some people like shotguns. Personally, for home defense, I'm going to have a pump shotgun. And I talked about that prior. Because just the sound of cranking that pump, that sound is going to scare the hell out of anybody. I don't care if they've ever heard a shotgun before. They're going to hear that sound and they know something metallic is charging up and getting ready. I remember years ago, my wife and I, were parked in a trailer on a lot in Phoenix, Arizona, right across the street from the dog track. And it was middle of the night, pitch black, and I had to go to the store. So my wife's at home with the baby, Eric, but she had my shotgun. Now, Angie's kind of scatterbrained, so she couldn't figure out how to load it, but it was still there. Right after I left, I mean within minutes, there was a knocking on the door and somebody saying, "Hey, can I come in and use your phone?" And my wife's like, "You got to be out of your frickin' mind." She picked the shotgun up, and she just went clank, clank. And all she heard was footprints running down the street. That's the good thing about it. I'm not saying never load it. I'm just saying that's what I like a pump shotgun for, because it impresses. It's a deterrent. And that's what is vital, is to be able to deter somebody so that they don't do anything wrong. Unfortunately, nowadays, the people, they think they're invincible, and they think that nothing bad will ever happen to them. So you chamber a round into your pump shotgun, they'll dare you to shoot them. Don't, unless they're threatening you. Now, let's say that's just for your house or your apartment. So there's a pump shotgun. Now, pump shotguns, I can tell you right now, some stores around have hell of deals on them. Like Big Five or Cabela's sometimes, Black Sheep here in town, Walmart. Just look for your ads. Do your due diligence. And this is the important thing. Don't get snagged with this impulse buying. It happens all the time. I've had friends do it, and they bought $1,000 guns and then turned around and didn't like them. And when they went to sell them, they thought in their head they're going to get their $1,000 back. No, they ended up selling them for like $700, $800. So
Don't impulse buy a firearm unless, now, this is the thing, unless that's what you want to do. That's the important thing. Now, if you're going to be doing traveling, you don't want a shotgun. First off, traveling, you got it's kind of touchy. You know, some states don't allow you to have a loaded firearm in a car. Some states, you can't cross the state line with a firearm. You know, like my grandpa used to tell me, never let the law get in the way of common sense. So if you're going to travel, I don't recommend a pump shotgun. I would recommend at that point a handgun. And you'll have to determine whether you want a revolver or a semi-automatic handgun. And a business location, the biggest, nastiest thing you can get your hands on. You want to scare the hell out of them. A nickel-plated Colt 45 works perfect. Because you can pick it up and show it to them, and they'll look at it and go, oh my God, that's a gun. But that's up to you. In the woods, you want something with a large caliber. You don't want a little pea shooter 22 unless you're looking to shoot rabbits or squirrels or something. So when I used to go hiking, I carried a 357 Magnum. It's light enough that I could carry it without worrying about it and having too much excess weight. Yet it'll drop a deer, and I've seen 357 Magnums take down a black bear too. So you need to figure out what it's for. That's your purpose, right? Now, if you're going to go hunting, if you say, well, I don't want it for self-defense. I already got something for that. I want a hunting gun. What are you going to hunt? Because if you're just going to hunt squirrels, you don't want a 300 Win Mag. So you've got to determine. Firearms are tools, generally. So you need to determine which tool you want to use for what job. So you need to determine which animals that you're going to hunt mostly. And then you're going to need to determine the distance of the shot. I went hunting with my relatives years ago, and everybody was carrying bolt-action 300 Win Mag or 30-06 with a 3-9 power scope on it, and I carried a lever-action 30-30 with just iron sights on it. And my uncle said, why don't you have a scope on your gun? I said, because we won't see a deer but maybe 100 feet from us, and that's it. That scope's not going to do us, either of us, any good. Iron sights, it'll do just perfect. Because that's where we were hunting. It was so woodsy. You're not going to see a deer, but maybe 100 feet max. You also, this is part of what's the necessary caliber. It's like Remington 700 bolt-action rifles. They make them in like 7 different calibers, 8 different calibers. So you have to determine what you're going to be hunting. If you're going to be hunting 150-pound white-tail deer, you don't need a 300 Win Mag. You'll tear a hole out of that meat. So something like a 30-30 be perfect. And I'll tell you a secret. The SKS, or AK-47, shoots a 7.62x39 round. It's the exact same muzzle velocity and potency as a 30-30. So a 7.62x39 and a 30-30 is, for all intents and purposes, the same bullet. Now, you're going to be hunting in the woods. You're going to be hunting on flatlands. See, if you're in Wyoming, where you can see 10 miles, yeah, you're going to want a good scope. Now, here's the other thing, and this is the one thing people don't think about. You're going to carry this thing 99% of the time. You're going to shoot it 1% of the time. My cousin bought a bull barrel, custom-made 300 Winchester Magnum with a fiberglass stock and a Bushnell bipod on it. The thing would drive a tack at 1,000 yards, but it weighed 15 pounds. But that's what he wanted to carry. I like my 8-pound Winchester 30-30. Yeah, let's see. So that's the hunting aspect. Now, again, if you're just going to be hunting squirrels, a 22 works just fine. Even a 223 will work just fine. You're not going to have a lot of meat left unless you do a headshot with a 223. But 22, oh, by the way, just for those of you who don't know, you're going to hear a lot of BS from the communists out there, especially the commies that are running for president. They want to be president next year, about how devastating and hard-hitting these AR-15 rounds are. An AR-15 round is basically a .223. Now, what does that mean? Well, if you have a 22, that's .22, and it's a little short bullet. A 223 bullet is the same exact diameter as a 22. It's just beefier and longer. So they're basically blowing it out their sphincters when they don't know what they're talking about, but they're trying to impress the other idiots out there who don't know what they're talking about either.
Now, if you're going to be hunting, now I hunted squirrels. Sometimes I hunted with a 22, but most of the time it was with a 410 shotgun because it was close in. I hunted quail with a 410 shotgun, and that's pretty much the lightest shotgun you're going to find. So if you're hunting birds, that's the easiest thing to use is a shotgun, unless you're real damn good with a rifle. But, you know, there's a thing. There's two ends to a bullet, where it starts and where it ends when you shoot it. That's what I'm talking about. It starts in your gun, and you don't know where it's going to end. And that's the problem when you're shooting up. You can ask the Muslims in the Middle East when they're shooting up. They have hundreds of deaths yearly because they shoot up. When they get excited, they shoot up. They aim up and they shoot their gun, and they just can't come to terms with the gravity that draws that bullet straight down through their head. So I like a shotgun. A shotgun's good. And a shotgun, you can get single shot. Those $100. You just a little lever, you click it, and the barrel falls forward, and you put a round in, and you straighten it out, and you have one round you shoot. It's great for kids because they're not going to go Rambo shooting a whole bunch of rounds, which are not cheap anymore. Now, shotguns, they also had lever-action shotguns, and they have pump shotguns and semi-automatic shotguns. So those are different types of weapons for hunting. And then for training, most of the time, if you're teaching somebody from scratch, you're going to be using a .22 caliber pistol. And those would be a semi-automatic pistol because they're the easiest thing to use, especially in a .22 caliber. They're much more accurate, but you have both. You have the semi-automatic and you have the revolver. Now, the revolver, you have a cylinder that holds 6 to 10 rounds. Depends on the manufacturer. But the cylinder is what I would refer to as idiot-proof. You pull the trigger, and it goes bang. A semi-automatic handgun, you have to pull the slide back. And I'll give you guys a secret. And I used to teach self-defense to women. And a lot of women can't grab. Let's take a 1911 A1 Colt 45, semi-automatic handgun. You would be holding it in your right hand. Obviously, none of your fingers are in the trigger housing. They're pointed straight ahead. The index finger is pointed straight ahead. And with your left hand, a man would grab the slide, hold the frame with the right hand so it doesn't move, pull the slide all the way back, and let go. And that's how you would chamber a round. Well, a lot of people can't do that. Not just women, but a lot of people can't do that. So here is a secret. You're doing it bass-ackwards. You hold the firearm, like I said. Now, it doesn't matter if it's a Colt 1911 A1 or a Glock or an H&K or a Sig Sauer or a Taurus or a Beretta or I don't care, any of this. You hold the gun with your right hand, not extended, just halfway out, right? And then you reach over with your left hand. You grasp the slide. You hold the slide, and you push the frame forward. In other words, you hold the slide with your left hand, and using your right hand, you push it forward. And you push the bottom part of the pistol forward enough, eventually it'll slip out of your left hand, and the slide will go and chamber around. So instead of pulling the slide back, you hold the slide, and you push the frame forward. Try it sometime. It's so much easier to chamber around. Training would be .22 is what I recommend. I trained on a .38 revolver is what I trained on originally. But there are other different firearms. As a matter of fact, you can also train on pellet rifles and pellet pistols. Those you can shoot generally in the city, like in the house or something. You know, they're not really loud, and they're not going to punch holes through the walls. So the training, it depends on you, how you want to do it. Training would not just be a pistol, it would be a .22 rifle. And I recommend, well, the first rifle I ever bought, Eric, was called a Cricket. It was just about as long as my arm. But when you got a six-year-old boy and you put this single-shot bolt-action rifle to his shoulder, it looks like it's made for a child. And it is. Very short rifle, single shot. And that's what you want. You don't want anybody going Rambo. Rambo, you know, that you don't waste the ammunition. So his first gun was a bolt-action, single-shot Cricket. And then after that, I got him a Ruger 10/22, which it has a semi-automatic rifle and holds 10 rounds. So you can do, and there's different ones. Marlin makes a good semi-automatic rifle. And you've got to balance between whether you want a tube-fed, and you know this, the barrel, there's a tube runs along the barrel, and you pull out this insert in that tube, and then you drop usually about 12 rounds with the lead aiming up,
in that tube, and then you push the insert back down, and now you've got, now you can fire. The problem with those, a tube-fed weapon, whether it's a 22 or 30-06, it doesn't matter. If you dent that tube, you're SOL. You can't load, and that's all you have. From that point on, you have a single-shot rifle, because you can only put one round in at a time. The other thing is that if you have a magazine-fed rifle like a 10-22, which takes a 10-round mag, and it can take a 20-round and 30-round and 100-round, it can take all of these different mags. If you lose the mag, you got a single-shot rifle as well. So if you're going to buy any rifle that takes a magazine, make sure you buy a dozen at least of spare mags. And don't be cheap. Don't get these $2.99 crap. Get the best magazines you can. They could mean your life in either a self-defense mode or food, if you have to go out hunting for food. Now, then we're looking at collecting. So we have defense, hunting, training, now collecting. Collecting is kind of tricky because collecting is buying a firearm on speculation that it might appreciate in value. I can tell you right now, if a gun's $100, $150, it is not going to appreciate that much, maybe $5. So don't waste your money on buying a whole bunch of cheap guns. And we're talking either revolver, semi-automatic pistol, shotgun, or rifle. You look for quality, and you try and buy... When you buy a gun, it comes in a box. Now, believe it or not, that's part of the collector mystique, is does it have the paperwork, original paperwork? Does it have the original box? Does it have, you know, everything that came with it originally? That'll knock 20% off the value of a firearm if you don't have all of that stuff. But there's variables, and these variables you need to learn if you're going to be buying firearms for collecting. And I mentioned this book. It's called Blue Book of Gun Values. And it's got, I got to tell you, yeah, it's a very light read. It's only 2,500 pages in it. That's how thick it is. And it lists so many different firearms, most people never even knew that they existed. And the funny part is, every gun that's in here, I can tear apart and fix. I've done a lot of work on the damn thing. So there's a lot of different firearms out there. There are some that are very rare. There are some that are highly collectible because there's maybe 10 to 100 of them ever made. There's some like Winchesters. To give you an example, an M1 Garand, a mint M1 Garand. This is a 30-06 used in World War II and Korea and a little in Nam. A standard Springfield M1 Garand is $1,000. If it's all matching Winchester, $2,000. If it's all matching Harrington and Richardson, $2,500 to $3,000. You see the difference? They can look exactly the same, but you need to know how to tell the difference between the internals and you know, all the other things that go with them. On collecting, don't get sucked into the commemoratives. Winchester comes out with their lever action Model 94 30-30, and they say, okay, this is a John Wayne commemorative, only 1,000 of them made. And a lot of nice engraving on it. It comes with a nice box and all of this, and it was like $500. And people would buy them, and then they'd say, all right, now they're out. They only had 1,000, so I want $1,000 for this gun. But then you keep seeing these things for sale at the gun shops, at the gun stores, and from Winchester. So these guns that they claim they're only making 1,000 of, they might have 5,000 to 10,000 of them out there somewhere. And it's a standard ploy. All the manufacturers do it. Ruger has done it many times. So these Winchester commemoratives, there are people that collect them. But I'll tell you how they collect them. They know what they cost new. When I first got into firearms, I got into the Winchester collectibles. I had like 30 of them. I bought them from a guy who's going out of business and he was retiring. And they're all brand new in the box. I pay $200 a piece. That was a lot of money, I'll tell you that right now. And I'm thinking, wow, these things are worth $400 or $500. The book said they're worth $400 or $500. I carry those around to a half a dozen different gun shows and never sold one. Finally, somebody came up to me and he said, look, you've been busting your butt trying to sell those damn things. You got to know the truth. They're not collectibles. They're just pretty guns. You want to get rid of them? The best you're going to get is $250 a piece for them. So finally, I ended up selling them $250, sold them all in the next gun show. So you've got to be careful what you buy. And the more you know about that exact firearm, the better you can do. Take World War II Lugers, German Lugers. You can buy a German Luger. That's a 9mm. You can buy a German Luger for, I don't know, $300-$400. But you'll swear that one sitting on the table that looks exactly like the one you just paid $300 for is the same gun, yet he's asking $2,900 and somebody's buying it. There are a lot of variables. There's a lot of manufacturers internal. Just because the gun says Winchester doesn't mean all the parts inside of it are made by Winchester. They could be made by some other vendor. So you need to know the slight differences in a lot of these collectible firearms. And firearms are valuable depending on models. The first AR-15 to come out by Colt was an SP-1. And it was a simple, thin-barreled. The forearm was triangular-shaped, so it fits your hand fairly decently. Semi-automatic rifle. And they were selling for $189. So I bought one. What the hell? I put it in my closet, forgot about it for 20 years. All of a sudden, that gun's worth $1,000. And that's what I got for it. So it just depends on the firearm and if it's quality. Do not buy garbage. Unless you were a gunsmith like me, I bought anything. I don't care what it was. It could be a blown-up shotgun. I'll buy it because I tear them down and I would use the parts internally. So there's different reasons why you would be buying a firearm. The whole thing here is knowledge is power. And the more knowledge you have, the more power you can exert over your purchasing habits for firearms. Now, there's more to just what I said than a revolver and a semi-automatic. We're talking, you can go back in time. Flintlocks, cap and balls, a flintlock, you're not going to ever hunt with one of them. I mean, if you want, you could. Cap and ball is a big thing now. Cap and ball is this. It's a muzzle loader. And so, in other words, you load it from the muzzle, you put the powder in, you take a ball, you wrap it in a patch, and you jam it down, and you pack it down, and then you half-cock the hammer, and you take a little cap. It's like an old stick'em cap, or it's a little silver cappy thing, and you put it over the nipple, it's called. And this nipple is something that sticks up about a quarter inch, and it has a hole down the middle of it. And this hole goes directly down into the chamber. The chamber is where the gunpowder is that you just loaded. Now, when you cock your hammer, pull the trigger, it hits that cap, sends a spark down. That cap's called a primer. Sends that spark down, ignites the gunpowder, and the bullet comes out the other end. That's called a cap and ball. And they have revolvers that way, and they have rifles that way. They even have shotguns that way, but that's just too weird. Now, in a rifles, you can start off with a muzzle loader if you ever want to, you know, play in that area. And by the way, there are no real value to modern muzzle loaders. 200-year-old muzzle loaders, that's a different ball of wax. Then they had something called a falling block. So you'd have this rifle that with a lever, and after you pull that lever down, the top part of the frame literally would raise up, and you would slide your bullet into that, and then you'd pull the lever back, and it goes back into battery, is what it's called, and then you would fire it. You're never going to see any of those either. So you're going to be, with rifles, you're going to be looking at bolt action, which are the more, bolt action rifles are more accurate than other ones. The semi-automatic rifles, they use some of the gases that the cartridge expands to move the action. With a bolt action, you use all the gas to throw that bullet downrange. So you'd be dealing with a bolt action rifle, a lever action rifle, a pump. Remington made some pump rifles, or semi-automatic rifles. And the shotguns are simple. They're single shot, lever action. They made some lever action shotguns. In fact, some of the John Wayne movies had him using a lever action shotgun. Pump shotgun, of course, and a semi-automatic shotgun. Now, I don't really like the semi-auto shotguns because most of them are too finicky with the ammo. And they can jam too easily, and that's dangerous. Let's see. Now, again, you got do your research on value. There's other books out there that you can get besides the Blue Book of Gun Values. There's the Gun Digest. And if you go to a gun show, you can find guys selling these Gun Digests. They come out every year. And you can pick them up. Sometimes you can pick them up at yard sales for 50 cents. They don't have 2,000 pages in them. They probably have maybe 300 or 400. But it gives you a lot of information on value and different firearms. So the key is to look at is this. What's your purpose for this firearm? Then you'd need to look at how easy is it going to be for me to get parts to repair this firearm. Granted, most firearms now have lifetime warranties on them, but if the Schumer hits the fan, you ain't sending it nowhere. And if you break a firing pin or run out of magazines, you can't get magazines, well, you're screwed. So how easy, that gun you just bought, how easy is it going to be for you to get parts to fix it? And then how easy is it going to be to get ammo? I have had guys, they said they get some weird caliber and love it, except you can't buy the ammo anywhere. You actually have to load it yourself because nobody stocks that ammo. That's really stupid. Might be a good collectible, but it's not going to be something you're going to be using all the time. Now, where are you going to buy these guns? This is the other thing that's important. If you buy it by a quote-unquote legitimate dealer, meaning somebody who has a federal firearms license, you will be filling out a federal form 4473. That's just the start. Depending on the state you're in, and I don't mean confusion, I mean the state you live in, there might be other requirements. There might be other restrictions. There might be a 3-day wait, 10-day wait, 15-day wait. There might be, if you've ever been charged with certain crimes, you might be banned from buying firearms. Democrats make all kinds of laws up. And as long as we have liberal judges, we're going to lose every case if we try and fight them. So you need to pay attention to your local laws. You don't want to get screwed up. I can warn you right now, if you violate these laws and are caught, your life is going to change totally. You can lose everything you own because you'll have to pay for a lawyer. There's all kinds of things, nasty, bad things to happen to you. Be aware of this. Don't do anything illegal unless you want to. And if you do, don't get caught. It's that simple. I don't recommend that. But if you go and buy from a dealer, again, an FFL, federal firearms licensee, you're going to have to fill out the paperwork and all of this stuff. Now, that doesn't quote-unquote register the gun. The dealer, by law, has to keep that piece of paper or that group of papers that you fill out for 20 years on premises. Now, when you call in, he does an NIC check, National Instant Check. When he gets on a phone call and he calls up and he says, this is the guy's name, this is address, this is driver's license number, whatever, and they say yay or nay or hold, well, that's the FBI, and they lie and say they don't save that information. Well, that's a flat lie. They save all that information. So this is what happens. You buy a firearm legally, there's going to be a trail back to you, a big, wide one. If you buy, this has already been proven many times. People in California bought AR-15s and AK-47s. This is before the background check. This is before the NIC phone call check. The ATF, Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, went to every single dealer in California and said, we want your complete records on everybody who's ever bought one of these type of guns. And they turned them in. They don't have an option. They just gave it to them. So that's something to be aware of. These forms also, I don't have the form here with me, but on those forms, they ask you, have you ever been adjudicated mentally defective? Have you ever been on psychotropic drugs? This kind of stuff. If you have ever taken anxiety medication, if you've ever taken depression medication, if you've ever taken, even by accident, there's a record of you having done so. So what can happen, and has happened many times, is that the law enforcement agency that wants you one way or another, or wants to ban specific types of people from owning firearms, will get these records, that 4473, the yellow sheet, and say this guy's been on drugs, even though he didn't know he was on drugs. He was just, because he said he had anxiety. He no longer can have guns. And they will come to your house, knock on your door, and take all your firearms. Realize what I'm telling you, I'm not dramatizing this. I'm really, really soft selling it. What they do is dangerous. And people die every day because they get shot by the law enforcement. When I was in Modesto, a man's in a bathtub. The only firearm he owns is a six-shot cap and ball made by Ruger, 44 caliber. He's in the bathtub, his wife sitting on the couch with their 14-year-old daughter in their pajamas watching Disney movie. The front door gets kicked in, and a bunch of screaming thugs come rushing in the door. The man hears the noise, grabs his six shot. He's naked. He goes running out into the hallway, and he gets 27 rounds from an MP5 9mm fully automatic assault weapon in his chest. And it turned out it was the wrong house. They didn't apologize. They threw the women on the floor, handcuffed them. The guy died in the hallway. They searched the house, realized it's not a drug house. Left the business card and walked out the broken front door. Left everybody there. This is standard operating procedure now for law enforcement in the United States. And I'm sorry for you one or two out there that don't do this, but the rest of them do, because that's just what they're trained to do. If you want to buy it with paperwork, you go right ahead and you do so. You can get some damn good deals. And if you're one of the people who say, I want that first Glock 21 that comes out, I want it, you go right ahead. It's totally okay. And you can buy it at a gun store, a pawn shop, big box store, like Cabela's or Walmart, that kind of stuff. So the drawback with that is you're going to register it, but there's possible deals. Now, you can buy on the internet, and you hear the communists always screaming about, anybody can buy a gun on the internet. Well, you can, but it has to be sent to a licensed dealer. You can't, it's not going to be sent to you. It doesn't happen, ever. It gets sent to a licensed dealer. So, in other words, we're back to square one. You're buying from a gun store. So you're going to do the registration and all of this stuff. If you buy, and if it's legal to do so, you can go to gun shows. Now, there's dealers that do gun shows as well. That's something to remember also. Not everybody that at the gun show sitting behind the table is a dealer. The majority of them are not. They're just Joe Schmuck who's got a bunch of handguns or rifles or shotguns, and he's had enough. He's just getting rid of them. That's all. Those kind of people generally don't ask for anything other than a receipt. They size you up. They look at you and determine whether or not you're a thug or an idiot who might hurt himself or a gang member, and they determine whether or not you're just a citizen, and they'll sell you a firearm. And you do the receipt, give them the cash, and off you go. No paper trail whatsoever, except for the receipt, of course. That's up to you to evaluate if that's what you want to do. Now, if you go to a gun show with the purpose of buying a firearm, what you don't want to do is walk around looking nefarious. You don't look over your shoulder all the time. Maybe you should be, because every gun show in the United States has at least a dozen undercover agents everywhere, from every agency, drug enforcement task force, gang task force, FBI, sheriff's department, police department. You don't know how many of these strange agencies there are, and they're all looking for people committing crimes at a gun show. They're watching for known felons. They're watching for wanted criminals. They're watching for people doing stupid stuff. And they will pop you. The other thing at a gun show is that police will drive through, or ATF will drive through, and they photograph every license plate in the parking lot. And then they run wants and warrants on every one of those license plates to determine whether or not that person is wanted. And if it shows up positive, well, they'll just station somebody out there waiting for you to come out, and then they'll arrest you. So there's pros and cons on that, too. But going to a gun show, you can find all kinds of deals in there, and it's cash or gold or trade. If you got guns you don't want, you can take with you. When you walk in the door, they're going to ask you to make sure it's unloaded. Then they're going to usually put a strap in there so it's inoperable, like a little nylon tie strap. And make sure you carry your gun in a soft case so you don't want it to get damaged. And have some kind of a way that you could, whatever you're going to buy, you can take out with you without getting scratched up as well. Like maybe buy another soft case or something. That's just my viewpoint on that. So you can buy from a gun store, pawn shop, one of the box stores, internet sites. You can buy at gun shows. You can buy through a paper. Now, not every newspaper allows firearm sales in it. We're in North Idaho. There's not that many Democrats up here yet. I'm sure within the next few years we'll be nothing more than a extension of Los Angeles. But as it is now, people advertise guns for sale in the local newspaper. And then you have the nickel ad, you know, the penny saver and nickel ad, whatever you want to call it. The throwaways, you find them at your supermarket like every Thursday or Wednesday. You can find deals in there for sale. You got to be careful about that. Use some common sense. Don't just... You know, some guy goes, yeah, I got this $1,000 gun, I'll take $250 for it. Meet me at my house. I live 100 miles north of here at about 10 o'clock at night. Yeah, don't do that, okay? And then, obviously, you got friends. And a lot of people don't look at guns as anything other than a tool. The guy next door to me used to hunt. He had a 270, and he hunted for 20 years. And then finally one day he said, that's it, I'm done. Too much work, I don't have time for this. So he had a nice Winchester bolt action 270, just a good standard small lightweight rifle that I know for a fact at a gun show I could get $500 for. He goes, give me $100. I didn't argue. I gave him $100. He was happy. So there's various places that you can buy firearms. There's more to this than I'm ever going to be able to explain to you, and I can tell you right now, there's way more to this. One of the most important things is how to evaluate a purchase. Like you say, let's just say you're looking for a Derringer. Well, okay, so there's a guy who's got five of them on his table. Well, which one should you buy? They're all the same year. They're all the same manufacturer. What you need to look at are the cosmetics and the mechanical aspect of it, and that kind of stuff. Always bring a bore light. Now, a bore light is like a little flashlight with an angle, kind of like a little piece of plastic. It's like a 90-degree angle that goes on the end of it. So when you turn the light on, and if you were aiming it directly to the left, it'd actually be shining directly in your face. And you would stick that in the bore. Like if it was a bolt-action rifle, you'd pull open the bolt and you'd stick it in the bore, turn the light on, and you could, looking down the muzzle, you can determine what's inside the barrel, how the rifling looks, if there's any signs of foul play or explosions inside or deterioration or rust or corrosion, that kind of stuff. When all else fails, take a piece of paper and just tear off a little piece of it and stick it down in the bore in the chamber, reflecting the light into the chamber. That helps. That works also. Okay, and if you don't have a bore light, well, that's the easiest thing to do. So the idea is to evaluate. The first thing you do is you look at the finish. Now, what kind of finish is this weapon anyway? Now, this doesn't matter if it's a handgun, a shotgun, or a rifle. If it's blued, you want it to be blued all over. You want it to be totally, you want it to look like brand new is what you want it to do. And I used to joke and say, people say, what are you looking for? I said, I'm looking for a $20 bill for $9.95. So that's what you do. And you're looking to see the quality of cosmetic finish. If the gun is worn, obviously that'll detract from the value. Now, there are variables to that as well. If this gun is 100 years old, 150 years old, of course it's going to have some wear on it. And that's considered. Again, obviously, the better quality cosmetic finish, the higher value of the firearm. Now, that's blued. If it's stainless, you want to make sure that it's not been scratched and gouged up. If it's nickel or chrome plated, then again, make sure that it's not scratched up or polished or discolored. Sometimes you can buy chrome or nickel plated handguns that look almost pink. Now, what that is that when you take a normal firearm or a piece of iron or steel and you want to chrome plate it or nickel plate it, you don't just put the chrome or nickel directly on it. First, you have to coat it with copper. Copper sticks to ferrous metal. Chrome won't. So you have to coat it with copper. Now, chrome and nickel then will stick to the copper. So you have two layers there. And you can tell when the nickel or chrome starts wearing because you'll get kind of a reddish or a pinkish tinge to the gun, to the metal part there. Okay, so that's it. Now, if it's a handgun, I advise taking the grips off if you can. Because you can remove the grips and you look at the metal there. And sometimes, you know, they'll wipe down the outside, but they don't care too much about the inside, and you're going to start seeing some rust and corrosion right underneath the grip. So just think about that. You also look in areas that you wouldn't think to look. Like I said, under the grips, around the trigger, around the front sight, the rear sight. You look everywhere you can to make sure there's no rust. That's important. Stains of any kind. Now, if it can be wiped off with a rag, that's no big deal. Scrapes, scratches, make sure there's no broken sights. That's important. Look at that. Make sure the trigger is functioning and not just flopping around there loose. And check the grips or the stock of the gun. sometimes people will buy a rifle and they get it real cheap because the buttstock is cracked. So they'll just buy a new buttstock and slap it on there. Well, it's not going to fit like factory original. So that can tell you right there that the gun at one time was mistreated. There's these little tricks to this. You work, if it's a pump action, you work the pump, you make sure that it works fine and everything locks up fine. If it's a lever action, like a Winchester or a Marlin rifle or a Rossi, work the lever action, make sure it's smooth and locks up well. Bolt action rifle, make sure the bolt functions right. I always pull the bolt out and check it and make sure it hasn't been messed with. Some, you get a lot of these wannabe gunsmiths out there and they'll take a file to metal. If they feel like it's a little sharp or doesn't move smoothly, they'll take a file to it. That removes metal. Most of the time you want to polish metal, the parts that wear, not file them down. So be careful of that. And again, you're checking now again for function as well. So you cock the firearm, you rotate the cylinder carefully if they allow it. Now, a lot of collectible revolvers, they don't want you to move the cylinder whatsoever. They don't want you to revolve it because that could put lightweight scratches in the cylinder. You ask before. You ask before you do anything. And there many people will have signs on the table say, please ask for before touching or do not touch. Well, don't show yourself as a buffoon or a moron by ignoring those. You always ask, always. Even if there's no signs on the table, you show the courtesy of asking. That'll help you get a better price in the long run. Otherwise, you check does the hammer cock back? Does it stay back? Does the safety work? Does it work properly when you pull the slide back? Does it stay open if there's no ammo in it? Does the magazine hold the slide back? You work the lever. You work all the different parts of the firearm to make sure they're all good. And then to make sure that it fires, well, you're not going to put a bullet in it and pull the trigger. Unless, of course, I got to tell you this story. I'm at a Stockton gun show, and it was kind of a dead day. And the media is always trying to get in, always. They were so bold, this report et comes walking through the front door, just ignored the ticket seller, comes walking through the front door with a cameraman right on her back, just following her. And she just walks straight into gun show. Well, the promoter stopped her and told her, no filming in here. And if you want to come in, you have to buy tickets. And she got all, well, I'm the media. You're First Amendment rights and blah, blah, blah. And he just said, get out. So she went out. Okay. So about 15 minutes later, this guy walks in. He walks in, pays his ticket, walks straight through the door to the first table, which was one to my right. And there was a lot of customers at that table, and he went over to an area where there wasn't any other customers, and he's picking up some handguns and looking at them and putting them down and picking up things and putting them down. And after a minute, he turns around and walks out. Yeah, that's kind of strange. About 5 minutes later, another guy walks in, does the same thing, pays the money, walks straight over to this table, reaches down, picks up a little pistol. It's a 25 automatic, puts the muzzle in the center of his hand and pulls the trigger, and the gun goes off. Apparently the first guy had loaded the gun and put a round in the chamber, and this moron got talked into coming in and shooting his hand. Bang! And the first words out of his mouth was, oh, they told me it wouldn't hurt. They were videotaping this from the outside. I immediately grabbed a rag, wrapped it around his hand, took him in the bathroom. And I patched him up as best I could. It was a through and through. It didn't hit any bones or anything. It hurt like hell, and he had to go to the hospital to get it stitched up. But I put antibiotic on it, wrapped it well. And I said, did they tell you to do that? And he said, yeah, they gave me $50 to come in here and pull the trigger. They told me it wouldn't hurt. It's too small a gun. It's a small gun. So we called the sheriff's department, and the sheriff came out because there's maybe one gun show out of 1,000, there's a live round that goes off. And law enforcement is ready to jump on that, let me tell you right now. So sheriff comes out, checks everyone. I'm an eyewitness. The guy got arrested for discharge of firearm in a state building. And the reportette and cameraman got arrested and taken to jail. Taken to the sheriff's office. I don't know what happened after that. That's the kind of stuff the liberals do. They have no morals in any way, shape, or form when trying to get a story. So to test a gun if it fires, I have a dowel, and it's a quarter inch diameter dowel, and it's about 6 inches long. Now, one of my a good friend of mine and a customer, and a listener to the show, called me up and said, "Kurt, you told us years ago use a number two pencil with a new eraser." I said, "Well, yeah, that's true. I do that." So you can use a pencil, an unsharpened pencil, with a new eraser, not something that's been used, because you want that flat top. And that actually works a little better. Like, let's say you're checking out a Beretta 92. So first, pull the magazine out, make sure it's empty, cock the hammer, point it straight up in the air, and lower the eraser first into the muzzle. Down the barrel, it'll rest on what's called the firing pin block, and then pull the trigger. What should happen is the firing pin should hit the eraser of the pencil hard enough to knock the pencil out of the barrel. If it doesn't, then it's obviously not going to fire around. I've found dozens of handguns that the firing pins were broken or too short and wouldn't work. And you do the same thing with a rifle. You just, like a bolt action, right? You make sure it's empty, cock the bolt, close the bolt, aim it straight up, drop the pencil down, eraser first, wait till it's centered on a bolt, pull the trigger. You should, if it doesn't knock it out of the barrel, it should make it jump a half a foot anyway inside the barrel, so you just hold it to your ear and you can tell that. That's a trick that it was well known 20, 30, 40 years ago, but nowadays people are like, "I don't know if it fires. I don't know if it works." You know, they don't even have the common sense to figure that one out. Now, the other thing, and I mentioned this before, is this the original? Let's say you're buying, you know, you always want the best bang for your buck. So you're going to buy a handgun. You want the best quality you can get, and you want it to come with all of the paperwork in the original box. Now, here's why. If it's collectible, collectors always want the boxes. When I closed my gun shop down in 05, I had hundreds of original boxes. People would say, "I want to buy that gun, and I don't want the box." Okay, I'm not going to argue. And I keep the boxes. I ended up selling the boxes on eBay because people wanted that box, like a Sig Sauer box, 9mm. The guy has one, but he doesn't have a box for it, and he wants to sell his gun, and it sells better, faster, and for a little more money if he has a box for it, the original box. So if you buy a gun, save your box. Find some place, put the box somewhere where it's not going to get high humidity or destroyed or what have you. Because those boxes can help you bring top dollar if you turn around and sell your gun. So you look for the original box, and you look at the serial number on the firearm, then look at the serial number on the box. Make sure they're original. And you ask the guy, "What is it? Does this come with a holster? Does this come with ammo? Does this come with a cleaning kit? What does it come with?" You ask him, because you're going to need all that. If he has it, fine. If not, no big deal. Now, here's the other thing. Do you really need that? I know some people can say, what are you crazy? Nobody needs guns. They want them. Yes, well, I understand. But let's say you're law enforcement and you need to buy a duty weapon. Okay, well, there's a need there. Do you need a carry gun right now? Or do you have one that'll work? Or is this one going to be better for you? You have to look at your needs and wants. If you're in a dangerous situation and there's a restraining order out on somebody who's threatened to kill you, well, you're definitely going to need a gun. So determine whether you need it. Whether you want it, you've already figured that one out. And now determine whether you need it. If it's your last dollar, I refuse to sell firearms to people at gun shows. I've had man and woman come up, and they're in their 20s, and they've just moved into a place in San Francisco, and they were afraid of all the neighbors around the neighborhood because they were all thugs. First thing I said, you need to move. And a second thing I said, well, you need to buy a pump shotgun. They were talking to each other, and I could hear the man say to the girl, we can talk the landlord into, you know, holding off for a couple weeks for the rent. And I said, look, no, I'm not going to sell you a firearm because I refuse to take somebody's last dollar. I won't do it. So instead, I sold him a big canister of pepper spray and taught them exactly how to use it, and, you know, the whole nine yards. So that only cost them $25 as opposed to $200. Is this that you're looking at buying a good value? Let's say you want to go deer hunting. So you're looking at a Savage bolt-action rifle with a 3-9 power scope on it, a sling, and a gun case, put it in. just a standard 30-06 bolt-action rifle. And the guy says, this is a hell of a deal. It's only $500. And you look at that, and then you think back, because what do you do before you buy a gun is you do your own due diligence and find out what they sell for. And if you have the Blue Book of Gun Values, you can look it up there. Or you can remember that you walked into Cabela's and saw the same gun for $379 with a scope, with a sling, with a case. So this is what you need to figure out. Is this a good value? On the other hand, I've seen people in an emergency situation spend $100 more than something was worth. I had a Detonics. It was a handmade 45 ACP. It was a cut-down version of a Colt 1911 A1. And I was selling it for $375. And this is in, I think, Santa Rosa. Saturday, early Sunday, nobody cared about it. Finally, I said, you know, I'm just, and everybody's coming by, especially the other dealers, I'll give you $350 for that. That's not worth that much. It's just some handmade gun. It's not no big deal. Well, I happen to have known what it was. And I got pissed off in the middle of about 11 o'clock Sunday. So I took the tag down and put a $500 price tag on it. And then I went to get lunch for us. When I came back, the gun's gone. I go, what happened? Oh, guy bought it. I go, well, a guy bought it? I jacked the price up. And she said that a guy walked in the front door, walked directly over to the table, said he was a pilot for United Airlines, corporate pilot. And he was authorized to carry a gun, and they required him to carry a small footprint, large caliber handgun. And the Detonic is it. It's 45 ACP. And the guy goes, looked at, this is my wife telling me this. The guy looked at it and said, my God, the last one I saw was $750 at a gun shop. $500, you bet. And of course, all the dealers around there that are trying to lowball me on a thing was, huh? So the guy was willing to pay price because he needed it right now. So sometimes that's what you're going to need to figure out. So anything that you're buying, you make sure there's no broken parts on it, unless you know how to replace the parts. Personally, I wouldn't even waste my time if I were you. Me, as a trained gunsmith, that's a whole different ball of wax. I can waste my time. I have bought, we had a sign in our Modesto stores that says, I buy everything. And I do. People would bring in double barrel shotguns that they were 40 inches barrels, and the last 6 inches were blown back like a peeled banana. I'd buy it. I'd cut them down to 18 and a half inches. But I bought those. So many guns people would bring and buy them for $20-$30 because I'd tear them down and take the internal parts and save them to repair better quality firearms at a future date. And that's standard procedure for most gunsmiths. So you need to determine what you want. You need to determine what you need, how much money you want to spend, where you want to get it, because there's ramifications for all of them. Now, I'm in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. 30 miles west of me is Spokane, Washington. Two different states, right? Idaho, Washington. Now, according to the organization that wants to cease all civilian firearm sales, the ATF, you can go into a contingent state, meaning a state that's touching your state, and you can buy and sell long guns, rifles, and shotguns. So if you want a hunting gun and you don't want anything with paper, you jump over the state line, go to the gun show, buy yourself a rifle, you're fine. You may not buy or sell handguns across state lines. Yeah, explain that one to me. Also, explain to me, if you get a federal firearms license, why isn't it good federally and just in the state that you have the license in, the address of your business? Yeah, they can't explain that either. So be aware of the local laws, requirements. Don't do anything shady or nefarious. I mean, that's my recommendation. You can do what you want. My recommendation is toe the line when you're purchasing a firearm, because law enforcement and the government, and I mean city, county, state, federal, they make their money off of schmucks who don't pay attention to the law. Be aware of what you buy, where you buy it, who you buy it from. And I'll tell you, the idea of getting a receipt can save your butt. When my wife and I first got married, I wanted a little handgun just to defend ourselves when we were driving, when we were out, because I lived in Hollyweird. So I bought a little 25 automatic. It's not the caliber. It's bullet placement. Let me assure you on that. So I bought this little gun, and I got a receipt. And it was from a black woman. I bought it from a black woman in Hawthorne. And she said, honey, I'm giving you a receipt, and you make sure you hang on to this receipt as long as you live. Bought the gun, put the receipt in an envelope, put it in my safe. Then I sold this thing 10 years later. 20 years after I bought that little pistol, the FBI shows up. And they say, well, we tracked the gun to you. It ended up being used in a murder robbery in Inglewood, California. So what did you do with that gun? So I showed him my receipt, and I showed him the receipt that I had got from the gentleman that I'd sold the gun to. And it was an older gentleman who collected these little 25 automatic pistols. Mine had been a Colt, probably made about 1930. And his house had been robbed. So somebody stole the gun. So that's what they do. They have the FBI tracks and the ATF every firearm that's found in a commission of a crime. They want its hierarchy. They track it back like you wouldn't believe. They know where it's manufactured. They know the date it's manufactured. They know the name of the manager who issued the serial number, and they follow it all the way forward. So just be aware, when you buy a firearm, there is a hierarchy or there's a footprint that's been following that firearm up to you. It depends on your mood and the law if you want any paperwork from when you buy it on. So that's all I can think of right now of how to buy a firearm. Any questions on that, you guys just get a hold of me at the bottom of armchairsurvivalist.com. There's an email address. I'll be more than happy to answer any questions. And I'll tell you, nowadays, let's say you buy a Remington 870 pump shotgun. Okay, you get a hell of a deal on it. And you want to know how to fix it or repair it or refinish it. Go to YouTube. It tells you everything. Hell, you don't even need to go to school anymore to be a gunsmith. You get a weird gun that you don't know what it is, go on YouTube. I bet you somebody's got a picture of it there and how to tear it down. Word of warning to you guys, if you're going to buy a gun, you better get off your butt and do it as quickly as possible and stock up on whatever ammunition you can get. There's already a shortage of ammunition in the United States, and then Dimwit went out and he decided to ban the importation of all the surplus ammo that had been coming out of Russia. We're talking Thule ammo, Wolf, any of that stuff. That was supplying about 60% of the sales in the United States. It's now banned. So if you can find it, especially 7.62x39, which AKs shoot, SKSs shoot, you can get that, you better get it as quickly as possible, because I guarantee you within the next 2 months, the prices are going to be double on any of the ammo. Is going to go through the roof. If you think it's expensive now, you just wait. As soon as this ban starts hitting, ranges have been buying Wolf ammo to use in the range, you know, indoor ranges and outdoor ranges and stuff, because it was inexpensive, comparatively inexpensive ammo. Well, that's gone. Anyway, there's much more to this than meets the eye. We're under a communist rule now, and they're going to be doing everything they can to take weapons out of our hands. So, again, if you were thinking of buying a gun, stop thinking. Get one. And if you've never owned a firearm before, remember, knowledge is power. So you need to learn how to use firearms. You need to learn the common sense. There's only two rules to firearms. Number one, there's no such thing as an empty gun, right? Very simple. And the number two, never point a firearm at something you don't want to put a hole in. If you just followed those two rules, you would never have a missed shot. You would never shoot somebody by accident, and you sure as hell wouldn't shoot yourself by accident. Because why? There's no such thing as an empty gun. If I open a gun up and show you that it's empty and hand it to you, what's rule number one? There's no such thing as an empty gun. Then you're going to check that gun and you're going to make double sure there's no ammo in it. And number two, never point a firearm at something you don't want to put a hole in. And that includes you. So don't look down the barrel. Now, you think that's a joke? It's not. I've seen too many idiots look down the barrel of a gun loaded. There's, like I said, there's more to it than this, and you can find out yourself what's going on. Oh, I can't think of anything else. This is the Armchair Survivalist signing off. Keep your nose in the air and your ear to the ground, and stay safe and stay aware.